This is a true crime roundup from the On Deadline podcast. We explore crime stories reported on by Odyssey's radio newsrooms across the country. I'm your host, Lauren Berry. This week, we're diving further into the Lindsay Clancy case as jury deliberations begin. She is a Massachusetts mother who is on trial for killing her three children. And the case has opened up a national conversation about postpartum depression and postpartum psychosis. We'll hear a listener who called in to an Odyssey radio station about his own experience with postpartum disorders. Hosts from Odyssey stations will also share their experiences and draw connections to past cases. We'll also hear about a bizarre development inside of the courtroom this week. A mother accused of strangling her three children to death. It's a case that's almost too gruesome to fathom. Yet it's not the first time a mother has taken her children's lives. And the Lindsay Clancy case has shed light on the challenges that families face in the postpartum period. Mothers are often exhausted and left to deal with physical, mental, and emotional changes that their bodies went through during childbirth. Sometimes they can suffer from postpartum depression, or the more rare postpartum psychosis condition. That's what Clancy's legal team says she was dealing with when she killed her kids. But does it explain the allegedly premeditated actions that she took? While Clancy has some dedicated defenders, others see her as evil. Conservative political commenter Matt Walsh, for example, said that he thinks she was simply selfish and hated her children. Kim St. Ong and Mark Cox of the Mark Cox Morning Show out of Odyssey Station KFTK in St. Louis discussed Walsh's comments and some of the other discourse around the Clancy case this week.
The trial for Lindsay Clancy is continuing today, but this is kind of when it all builds up and we wait to see what happens because they're expecting closing arguments and then the jury to start deliberating. Keep in mind, this is a Massachusetts mom, a former labor and delivery nurse, who prosecutors say that she strangled her three children at their home and then tried to jump out the window. She survived and is partially paralyzed. And the argument for her has been that she suffered from postpartum psychosis, that she heard voices and that led her to do that, and that she, for that reason, belongs in a psych ward, not convicted of first-degree murder and in prison. Now, I made the argument about this whole thing, and I had pretty strong feelings about something that Matt Walsh had said about postpartum depression. And I didn't suffer from postpartum depression with either of my two kids, but I have dealt with some stuff. And it can get kind of scary, the thoughts that go into your head. And so I was very irritated that Matt Walsh was saying that stuff. I actually unfollowed him. I just didn't want to deal with it. I thought it was completely... just lack of taste, I guess, the way he completely dismissed any sort of like a mental thing going on after women have children. I think that's garbage if you want to pretend that that's not a thing. Now, do I think that that means that Lindsay Clancy is not guilty? No, I have not. I've never said that. I do think Lindsay Clancy is guilty. So you can say what Matt Walsh said was stupid, but also think that Lindsay Clancy deserves to be in prison because when you look at the things, it's the way she went about it, it seems like it was very well planned out. And I know, Mark, you were talking about Allie Beth Stuckey during the commercial break, and that's someone who I have followed closely over the years. She's got a podcast called Relatable, and it sounds like she changed her mind, her stance on this.
So this is about a 7.5 minute clip that she put out, which let me summarize it before I play the part that I've edited for you here. She basically said that she misunderstood and she apologized because she truly believed that this woman was a victim of the medical system, and multiple doctors had put her on 13 different medicines that were conflicting and drove her into this psychosis. And she, not that she didn't think she was guilty of the action she took, but she thought that the circumstances of her guilt were altered by by this medicine, and that should play a role in this trial. And she has since changed her mind after coming across some new information after listening to the actual evidence that was presented at trial.
So I heard that postpartum psychosis, which I had never heard of until this trial. I've heard of postpartum anxiety, postpartum depression, things like that. I heard that they attach that word postpartum to it because it automatically kind of triggers empathy. I mean, look at the way that these moms have come out and been supporting her. They are standing outside the courthouse and they're holding signs saying, "We are Lindsay Clancy." I think you can empathize with someone who's going through postpartum and the struggle that can come with that sometimes from a mental standpoint without in any way saying what you did is okay or that it justifies what you did. Because I know plenty of women who have struggled with postpartum depression because it is a very real thing. And it is concerning if you're on several medications at the same time and the way that those interact with one another, that is problematic and that's something that needs to be looked at. But you can't use that as a justification for, I went down and I strangled my three children.
Well, and there was intentionality to it, and there was planning and all of that. I can't envision this jury not finding her guilty of her actions and sentencing her to life in jail. I can't envision that scenario here.
While Clancy received mental health diagnoses before the killings, she was not diagnosed with postpartum psychosis until after they took place.
Wow.
And
I did not know that.
Mm-mm. No, I've followed a little bit. I've tuned in when I can. But man, I mean, this has been going on for weeks, so it's hard to tune into all of it. Someone on the social media was asking how old her kids were. So she had a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and an 8-month-old. Which is just so tragic. She sent her husband, it's seen in a text, sent him on an errand. Hey, do you want to pick up some takeout? I think she even had him go on one more additional errand and clearly wanted the time to be able to do this, to be alone in the house with the kids. So I don't know how you wouldn't be able to say then that would be first degree murder, because the difference between first degree murder and second degree murder is that first degree murder is planned out versus second degree murder is, for example, you catch someone cheating and in the heat of the moment you kill them.
Right,
that's still
right.
Murder, but it's second degree versus, oh, you plan this out. You research how long this is going to take for your husband to run this errand and you made sure that he was out of the house. That's first degree murder.
It was hard to listen to yesterday that witness describe him arriving home, finding her outside, worried about her, calls 911, waits for a neighbor to get there and says, then he says, I'm going to go in and check on the kids. And he walks into the house and finds all three of his children dead.
I can't even
it's
wrap my brain
just
around that.
The most tragic case.
Scoot out of Odyssey Station WWL in New Orleans also weighed in on the Clancy case this week. He connected it to the case of Susan Smith, a mother who was convicted of killing her two sons in South Carolina.
People just can't imagine killing your children. Lindsay Clancy's trial is going on. It's getting close to the end, getting close to going to the jury, and it will be interesting to see how long it takes them to come to a decision about her guilt or innocence. She is charged with killing her three children with, I think, elastic exercise bands. She choked them to death and then jumped out of a second-story window. Social media is ablaze with theories about the father really doing it because the father is already remarried to somebody who kind of looks like his ex-wife. The theory is that the father wanted to get out of the marriage, didn't want the kids, wanted his new life with this new woman, and so he killed the kids and pushed her out of the second-story window, making it seem as if she did it, and she jumped out of the second-story window to commit suicide. She's in a wheelchair as a result of that, but she is, obviously not dead. She's in court. Just let me bring you up to date before I get back to some of your text messages. After about a month of testimony, the jurors in this case are continuing to hear from final witnesses in the case about the woman who strangled her kids. A forensic psychologist hired by the prosecution to evaluate Lindsay Clancy's history basically says the defense claimed that she had acute postpartum psychoses is something that is a factor. It's a rare mental illness that can follow a childbirth. Kirk Heilbrun, who is the psychologist, he told jurors that he didn't believe that the woman's claim that she has hallucinated a voice telling her to kill our children is accurate. The kids ranged from 8 months to 5 years old. She had recently stopped breastfeeding her 8-month-old as she continued to, according to her own admission, suffer from mental health issues. She checked herself into a mental hospital at one point, and she just cried out in a lot of ways. The prosecution is saying that she didn't take her medicine properly. The defense is saying that the medicines were working against each other and turned into a volatile situation. Again, this is an interesting story because it, and by the way, the courtroom has been packed every day in the latter days of this. She had been seeking help, and she had told people that she never talked about, according to witnesses, she did not talk about killing her children, but she did say she had suicidal thoughts. And she apparently was suffering from postpartum depression, which, again, is one of the things that is at the focus of this case, something that a lot of men don't relate to. Because they can't. I mean, I can't relate to it, but I believe women who say they have this issue. A lot of men don't even believe it. Say, it's just a farce. It's just a phony thing. Women are just making excuses. I don't believe that. Now, again, I'm not a woman, so I can't tell you for sure. But it just seems like there was a lot going on here, and it might be the system that really failed this woman and really failed the children. Because the three children are dead, you know, and that's the saddest part of all of this, that the three kids are dead. And this really brings back memories of the case of Susan Smith. Remember Susan Smith? I know many of you remember this case. Susan Smith was convicted of killing her two sons. She seatbelted them into the car, and she let the car drift into this lake and sink. And I think it took 16 minutes for the car to totally sink. And her two boys drowned in the back of that car. And Susan Smith immediately blamed a black man for making her get out of the car, carjacking her car with her two sons in it, at gunpoint. And there was a nationwide search for this mythical black man that was mythical. He didn't even do it. But it's sad that Susan Smith thought that this would be okay, that you know, that people would believe that a black man did this. She finally admitted that she killed her two sons. And from the beginning, I remember talking about this on the air. From the beginning of this case with Susan Smith, it just did not seem like she was telling the truth. It seemed like she was making this up all along, and I remember saying that I don't believe the story about the black man doing this. I think that I think she killed her kids, and as it turned out, she killed her kids. I think the prosecution wanted the death penalty, but she got life in prison. She was up for parole, and she argued that she is very sorry for what she did. If she could take it all back and not do what she did, she would do that. But she can't. She was denied parole, and so, you know, this is a woman who she, you know, it's hard to know or to understand what people are thinking or feeling when they kill their children. I mean, just think about what that would take. And I know many of you are imagining your kids or your grandkids, and you can't even fathom the idea that somebody would do this. But there are women who do this, and some of it is linked to a postpartum depression. But I think, you know, if you kill your kids, you have to deal with the consequences, and there have to be consequences. You know, maybe as a society, we can have some understanding for the reason of postpartum depression, postpartum psychoses. We can understand that may have driven somebody to do something, but I don't think those things are an excuse for what was done. And I think you have to, you know, spend some time or life in prison as a result of that. You know, because, you know, too often people don't speak for the children. People don't speak for the child that is dead in a situation. And we talk about the mother, or we talk about the father, we talk about something that's gone on, or why something happened accidentally. We talk about all of that, but we don't speak for the children who can't speak for themselves. And to me, that's a true tragedy. But, you know, when I started hearing about this case, I immediately started thinking about the Susan Smith case. And just many of us remember what an extensive story that was. And then the lie about a black man taking a gun and forcing her out of the car and killing her kids. And then she finally broke and admitted that she had done it. And she is still in prison today.
On the Adam and Jordana Show out of WCCO News Talk in the Twin Cities, Adam Carter and Jordana Green extensively discussed the Clancy case this week. Green shared her own experience with postpartum anxiety and depression, more common conditions than the postpartum psychosis condition, under the microscope in Clancy's trial.
But help me understand something, if you will, and I'm talking to you, Jor, or our listeners. Help me understand why there is so much support for Lindsay Clancy. This is a woman who killed her three children. Mm-hmm. Her trial is going on right now. I think it's almost at its conclusion. I really haven't paid much attention to this story.
Because it's hard to watch.
That, and I'm just not, like, this is a story that really does nothing for me. Like, mm-hmm. you know, these high-profile, either celebrity or murder cases. My attention was drawn to the story because there are so many people that are supporting her. And
yes,
I'm wondering why. Now, that I understand that they're, part of this is the question of postpartum depression, mm-hmm. which I know is a very real thing. I know people who have dealt with it, but those people didn't kill their kids because of it.
They did not.
And I just find it strange that there's this huge support of this woman. And can you help me understand why that is?
I can. And this is a very sensitive story, and it's awful, and it's tragic, and it's horrific. And for those who haven't been looking on social media or who have been turning away, the story is basically that Lindsay Clancy, she's 36-year-old mom of three. By the way, she was a former labor and delivery nurse. So she knows, she understands gestation, postpartum, you know, she understands bringing babies into the world. She's on trial for first-degree murder, and no one is disputing that she killed those babies. She doesn't dispute it. Cora was 5, Dawson was 3, and Callan was 8 months. So for those that are first hearing about this, after Lindsay strangled her children to death, she jumped out of a window to kill herself in an attempted suicide. And she did not succeed, obviously, and she became paralyzed from the waist down. So she is in court now on these charges, of course, of murdering her children. And she knows she did it, and everybody knows she did it. But her defense team is saying she was in the grips of not postpartum depression, Adam. And this is where your question comes in. Yes, she had postpartum depression, and all of us do. I did. I had to be medicated for it. I had terrible thoughts about neglecting my children when I had postpartum depression. That is real. And many, many women have postpartum depression. In fact, PPD, postpartum depression, affects 1 in 7 new mothers. That is a high amount. And, you know, older generations used to call it the baby blues. Mm-hmm. And it's because a physiological thing happens. The hormones that you were having in your body for 9 months to grow this human have now all been released. You're now getting no sleep. You have less hormones. You're recovering from a traumatic event, passing a human through your vagina and giving it life. And maybe you're nursing now. And there comes with other things. But postpartum depression is defined as deep sadness, severe fatigue, anxiety, and yet mothers are aware that they feel sad. Mothers are aware that they have responsibilities. They're in reality. They're living in the world. Postpartum psychosis, PPP, is rare. It affects one or two people per thousand mothers. Okay, so it's not unheard of, yeah. but it's more rare. And what happens with PPP? You get hallucinations, command delusions. We've often heard other women. There was another mother who killed her five children by drowning them in a bathtub. She heard the devil telling her that the devil is in these kids and she has to kill those kids. And she did. Mm. Also, with postpartum psychosis, you are in a complete break from reality. You are not living in the world. You have a loss of your rational capacity. You have a loss of judgment. You are, I guess, technically insane. You don't have control of what you do. Now, this woman still murdered her three children, correct. And she cannot walk among us. She cannot. It's very sad that that happened to her, but she is an unsafe person to be around because she has had a break with reality. And she probably wouldn't even, she would probably say, I need to be in a mental hospital
right.
for my whole life. The reason there are women dressed in pink outside of the courthouse is because so many of us have had postpartum depression. Some have had psychosis, and there isn't enough support and help
okay.
for women. Because even if you don't have postpartum depression, there still is not enough support, in my opinion, for mothers. It is an overwhelming, just enormous responsibility when you have a small child. And not just one, two, three. It gets harder as you have more. Not to say you shouldn't have more, but also postpartum depression and postpartum psychosis, it gets worse with every pregnancy.
Yeah.
So even if you were fine with the first one, I didn't have any baby blues, I'm totally fine. The next one, it will get more severe. And that's what happened with mine. I didn't know I had postpartum depression with the first one. I just thought, oh, it's baby blues, it's loss of hormones. By the time Ruby came, my third child, mm-hmm. I needed to be medicated.
Yeah.
I didn't lose reality, but I couldn't get out of bed. I was clinically depressed. And, I mean, it was really bad. So I needed to be medicated. So I understand that. I understand the diagnosis. And I think the support just comes from sympathy. No one is supporting a woman who murdered her three children. She should not, like I said, she should not walk among us, mm-hmm. and she should be punished for that. But I think what they're trying to do is shine a light on moms need more help.
Okay.
Moms need more help. And also, this woman, Lindsay Clancy, was begging for help. She was on three different kinds of medications to help her. She had told her doctor. She had told her husband. She had asked for help and was being medicated for it. It just wasn't working. They had had a nanny, but I guess they decided as a couple to let the nanny go, which after you make a note, friends, if your wife says to you, I don't trust myself around the children and I hear voices telling me to hurt them, you don't fire the nanny. You also maybe don't let that woman be alone with the children. You take some sick time from work and you help in the morning. You hire full-time help. You have a mom move in or a trusted person. When somebody has postpartum psychosis, and this woman was diagnosed with it, she should not have been allowed to be alone with her children. And the system and her husband and her support system and her family failed her epically. Not only her, they failed those children who are now dead.
The doctors for sure. I mean, and I'm not willing to blame the husband. I don't know enough about the story mm-hmm. to say the husband saw these warning signs and still said, oh, we're going to be fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
For all those points, I totally agree. We need to shine a light on it, especially yep. if women aren't getting help 100%. Mm-hmm. But I think about the Hopkins daycare and the guy who killed mm-hmm. his wife and his child in front of other kids. And that takes a certain mental break mm-hmm. for you to do that. And I understand that, but I also don't want to forgive somebody we shouldn't forgive people for doing that.
No. And I look, maybe some of these women are saying that, but I certainly don't agree with that. Lindsay Clancy is a severely mentally, what do I say, or emotionally, profoundly
broken
person. Yes. And now also when she comes back to reality, because people, of course, can recover from postpartum psychosis. Of course you can if you are medicated with the right things, if you have the right care, if you get a break. She was suffering from severe insomnia. You know why? Because 8-month-old babies don't often sleep through the night. And if you're nursing them, like so many of our pediatricians just say, nursing is the best, and they pressure you into doing that, and they don't give moms a break, and they make you feel guilty if you don't nurse.
Yeah.
You know, then you're the one doing it. So I have a lot of sympathy. Again, this woman should go to a mental institution for the rest of her life, or if she's recovered, prison, whatever it is. But there does need to be more access to help, more believing women when they are struggling, whether it becomes if you get a diagnosis, your healthcare has to automatically pay for 24-hour care, no matter what that looks like, or you know, 8 hours of care if you're alone with your babies. Whatever it is, we need to protect the children and the moms.
Yes.
And let them recover. So, yes, it is weird to see these women outside saying me too. What's her name? Lancey?
Lindsay.
I'm sorry. Me too, Lindsay. You know, we hear you, Lindsay. We support you, Lindsay. She needed that support before she murdered her three children.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we're not set up as a society. Again, goes back to my multi-generational living idea. We're not set up as a society to help young mothers. And I take responsibility for mine. I moved away from my family. And I didn't have my mother or my sister. You know, I moved halfway across the country to find a job. And my husband and I settled here. And I didn't have the support of family. My mom came for like a little while, you know, when my kids were born. But then they go back to their own lives. My parents were still working. And I suffered. I didn't have psychosis, you know, but it's real. And so I have empathy for everybody in this situation. I also really wonder, I would love to say that her husband bears the responsibility, but you cannot make somebody else responsible for a different person's bad deeds. You know,
right.
The sins of the father and the son, you can't do that.
Plus they were, it's not like her husband was preventing her from getting treatment. They were getting treatment and they were getting guidance.
Right. She was on a couple of different drugs. Again, for some reason they were, the nanny had been let go. And I don't know why she was left alone with this child. And hindsight is 20/20. It's really hard to say to somebody, you have to have 24/7 care.
Right.
I mean, that's almost impossible.
Right.
But
good luck paying for that.
Good luck paying for that. That's right. But the fact that this woman was left alone with her children with deadly consequences should be a lesson for all of us.
So I think you laid it out beautifully why there are at least support for to draw the attention on her, but I still have a very strong reaction to, you know, supporting a woman who killed her three children. So we're talking about the Lindsay Clancy story, and I just started out by wondering why there's so much support, and I think, Jory, you did a marvelous job of educating me that it's not support for her saying, boy, she should be released, that she didn't do wrong. It's more of shining the light on what is a very serious problem.
Yes.
On postpartum psychosis.
Yes.
Which is a furtherment of postpartum depression, which is way too common. And I think those are all great points. But that doesn't automatically say, well, she should be, you know, forgiven. Or,
oh, God, no.
That's not the point.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Some of the texts are fascinating.
Yes. Let's get to some of these here.
For example, hold on. I don't know if the support is for her specifically. I think it's to highlight for women in the healthcare system who don't get the treatment they need. Absolutely. Didn't the woman repeatedly try to get help? Yes, she did. We mentioned that. She was on three different medications. She had told her husband and either her mother or her mother-in-law that she did not trust herself around the children, that she has had thoughts of hurting the children. Now, I mean, here's where some responsibility has to lay with the people that were around her. If you say, I might hurt our children, like if my husband had said, I might hurt our children, I would not let him be alone with the children without supervision until he got the help he needed to say, I feel like I can be trusted and I am well, and had a, you know, a psychological analysis that's saying, yes, this medication is working for him and he is better. the fact that the mother said that and nobody either listened or said, medication will take care of it, or, oh, I'm only going out for 20 minutes and left her alone. I mean, there's some responsibility. I'm not saying it's criminal, but boy, there's some responsibility on the husband for not helping more, in my opinion.
Well, I think he's obviously devastated by what has happened here. And I mean, it boils. Well, we don't know, like in the conversation that they had before he went out or whatever, like how she is telling. I mean, certainly if she's like saying, my God, don't leave me. I don't know what I'm going to do. That's one thing. But if she's having a good day and says, oh, I feel really good. I'm turning the corner here. And that's why I'm not ready to, you know, blame him for any part of this.
Okay. Someone said, my daughter's friend had PPD. After her baby was born, her mom stayed with her for a month. Then her sister came and stayed for weeks. After they left, she bought a gun, killed the baby, then killed herself. This is a serious issue. That is devastating. I am so sorry to read that on the radio, but it's real. And this is the story that didn't make the news. I mean, maybe it did at the time, but I'm honestly, like, this is a horrible tragedy, but I'm glad we're talking about it.
Absolutely. And here, a texter mentions this too. And this is kind of why my initial thought was what it was, being attracted to a cult of personality, like the people cheering for the guy who shot and killed Brian Thompson. That, I'll be honest with you, I was wondering, is this the same type of situation? It's not.
It is not. No.
The people who are cheering on Brian Thompson, or Luigi Mangione, I think that is a whole different thing.
Right.
And I think that is wrong, and that's sick.
Right. That is a hate cult that is supporting death and murder to further your cause.
Right.
So, incorrect.
Correct. This is totally different from what this is.
Mm-hmm. Adam and Jordana also spoke to a caller who told them he had his own experience dealing with postpartum psychosis, though his story had a happy ending.
Another text here. I have a family member who had postpartum psychosis and fortunately got the treatment and family support. Her child is now 2.5 and thriving.
Oh,
so
God.
Fortunate that there's care out there. Yeah, that is absolutely a heartening story. Brian is called in from Columbus. Brian, you have a story you want to share? Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I sent you guys a text.
Yeah.
My wife back in 1989 suffered from postpartum psychosis. Our firstborn, it was 3 months after he was born. And, you know, as a husband, I saw nothing to lead me to believe that there was going to be a problem. She traveled to Phoenix to visit her parents, just she and the baby. And she was fine when she left. I got a couple phone calls for her, although the last phone call that I talked to her on, she seemed a little off. But at the time, you know, I didn't put two and two together. Needless to say, she decided that, well, she, under her condition, she thought she was responsible for the AIDS epidemic and tried to kill herself and our son while visiting her parents.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was a very tough time in our life. But both are fine. We ended up having to hire a lawyer. She wasn't allowed to come home because she had charges filed against her, and ended up in a mental health facility in the Phoenix area for a few months. And it took us about 6 months to get through the court case and get her back home. She's, you know, obviously feels terrible about it. It really changed her life, and she became very introverted with the people who surround her because she was so embarrassed about what had happened and thought people would hate her if they ever found out what she done, well, you know, what had happened.
Can you share with us how, first of all, was it you who filed charges or was it the state of Arizona that filed charges? And did you agree with her going to the mental institution?
Oh, it was the state of Arizona that filed charges. And I agreed with her going because the choice was she was either going to be in jail or she was going to be in a mental health facility.
Got it. What did this do to your marriage?
Yeah, that's what my question is. How do you move past that, Brian?
Well, you know, did I think she did this on purpose? Absolutely not. you know, this is my wife. I married her for better or for worse, and worse happened. We got through it. We've been married 40 years, and life is grand.
How's your child now?
He is doing quite well. He's out in the working world. He's, you know, the only thing he has is he had an eye injury because she was going to drink toilet bowl cleaner if anybody walked in on her as part of her thing, and she spilled a little and got in his eye. Mm. But that was the only injury.
And their relationship is good now?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He knows what happened.
So,
you know, we talked to him about it.
Can you also share a little bit about what her treatment was like? She was in the mental, an institution, and clearly she needed help and she needed medicine. She needed to get better. Can you share with us how they helped her get over this or what the treatment was done?
Well, they heavily medicated her is really what they did. Mm-hmm. And she's been medicated, you know, on different mental health meds ever since. And to this day, she is. And throughout the years, she has tried, you know, well, I don't think I need that anymore. And she's landed in facilities based on stopping to take her medication. I think she finally realizes, though, that in order for her to be normal, she needs to take these meds.
Yes. Did she have emotional issues before the postpartum psychosis?
No, there was absolutely nothing.
No warning.
See, that's another thing. Right. It's not like you have to have a history of mental illness. This can be brought on by the changes in your body. Yeah. Through giving birth.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was 3 months after, which, you know, they did mention that, you know, that's when changes start happening after childbirth. So it was like right as those changes happened is when this episode happened.
We'll end this week's dive into the Clancy case in the courtroom. Jury deliberations are expected to continue on Monday. Here's the Dana and Parks Show out of Odyssey Station KMBZ in Kansas City, discussed Thursday.
And there was some discussion today as they're wrapping everything up as far as testimony goes, that one of the experts said to the jury that this was deliberate, that she knew what she was doing.
Now, this was a prosecution
yes,
witness.
And I've said this before. I will say it again. There is nothing in this world you could say to me that would make me want to have had to have sat through what those poor, isn't there 12, 13, 18 of them? It's a whole bunch of jurors.
12 of them are women.
12
and
women,
six men.
They'll figure out once prosecution and defense rests, they will figure out which one of those are alternates. But there's 18 seated.
Yeah. So court ended today. Everybody's gone home. The jury was sent home, so they are not being sequestered. This is from ABC News. The jury's been sent home for the day as the evidence portion of the trial has concluded. The judge is holding a charge conference, which is set for 2:30 p.m., so that has already happened or is underway, to hash out how the jury should be instructed on the law. Closing arguments begin tomorrow morning.
It is. This came up in our own family last night. I asked one of the kids, have you been following this? And they said, off. I know enough to be dangerous off and on, but they said, like, we can't just excuse this. We can't just say, well, she was out of her mind. Well, of course she was out of her mind. I mean, the opinions on this are so strong. There are throngs of people just showing up to court to support her.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying she doesn't deserve, you know, her family is there and understanding if, you know, from other women maybe who have been through this, but I would not want to be on that jury.
You'd vote guilty, wouldn't you?
How do you not? But then, okay, of course she's not in her right mind. She did what she did. Of course she was off her rocker, right? No one in their right mind would do what she did.
You would have to be.
But how many homicides will we say that about? Almost all of them.
No, not at all. A lot of people kill out of revenge.
Vengeance. Okay, you would take those off the table.
I mean, I would argue most of the murders in America are just rage killings. You know, you did me wrong, I'm going to kill you. Whether it's a bad drug deal or... you know, whatever. You left me, so now you and your new boyfriend are going to have to die. That is not not guilty by reason of insanity. That is guilty. Goodbye, you're going, or a robbery.
Yeah.
That turned into a murder. I mean, these are not people who are insane. These are people who are very sane, who knew exactly what they were doing when they went into the convenience store with a gun and demanded all the money out of the cash register and then decided to kill the only witness. That's not insanity. That is sanity and sick.
One of the last witnesses today was an FBI psychiatrist who testified that he does not believe her account that she heard a voice. And we talk, you know, ordering her to do this.
And only she would be able to say whether she did or did not.
Well, one of the things that was interesting, they had somebody on the stand at some point that said with an audio hallucination, okay, mm-hmm. that people who hear things legitimately have mental health struggles and they are hearing voices, that's not a one and done. Like they almost made it sound like you're hearing voices continually, okay? Mm-hmm. And you seek treatment for that, or you don't hear voices. You don't never, ever mention one single time that you've never, ever, ever heard a voice in your head. Mm-hmm. And then something heinous happens and you say, well, I heard a voice right before I did it. Say, do this. I don't know. I honestly feel so bad for those jurors. It would upend your life. You're going to need therapy for a long time after this.
Because of the pictures.
Oh, my God, yeah. Scott, you would not want to be seated in that courtroom.
I wouldn't want to be seated on any jury, but definitely not one like this. I would not want to be. I remember a handful of times in my career covering a murder trial.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a choice. It was my job. And I had to cover it. And I remember my first murder trial ever was in Ottawa, Kansas at KOFO. And when I was working there it would have been 1994, 95. And there was a 15-year-old boy who was being tried as an adult because he got into an altercation at a local park with a man.
Yeah.
And he was an older guy, you know, north of 40. I remember that. I don't remember how old he was. And this 15-year-old buried a 7-iron into his head and killed him. And that was my first ever murder trial. And I just remember, I don't remember seeing any pictures of the victim in that case.
It stays with you. All of that stays with you.
The testimony, you know, they had the coroner in and everything. And I just remember, man, I thought my first murder trial, I'm like, oh, I get to cover my first murder trial. I was very excited in a weird, sick way. But I just remember when that trial was over, I was like, that was nothing like I thought it would be. And it was gross, and the testimony was hard to hear.
Dana Wright and Scott Parks also discussed a bizarre development in the courtroom gallery.
Did you see yesterday someone seated in the gallery? I think they work for Vanity Fair. Look this up.
At the Clancy case?
Is in trouble because someone snapped a photo during a recess or like whatever. Someone snapped a photo, and she was smiling. How many times have you seen on a reverse shot at a crime scene and an officer or an assistant district attorney is there mm-hmm. and they're kind of chuckling? You know, maybe it's 3 hours after the homicide has happened. And is that disrespectful? Are you not like during a break in court, Scott, are you not allowed to lean over and say something to the person sitting next to you that has nothing to do with the trial? Like, did you hear about that good ad? Damn, you know, like, or just right. And officers will tell you this sometimes because they have to see all of the awful stuff they see.
Okay, so this was from the New York Post.
Yeah.
A reporter in a green dress has sparked backlash. A reporter.
Yes.
In a green dress has sparked backlash for grinning and winking at the camera during the murder trial of Lindsay Clancy. And she has been bounced from her gig with Vanity Fair.
Yeah, I don't think she should have winked.
Can't explain the wink.
A live court TV camera panned along a row of journalists in the courtroom gallery Monday when it caught Brittany Romano apparently hamming it up with a smile and a wink as other reporters looked stone-faced. The trial is over. Whether Clinton, you know the story, they give the background on the case here. All right, so here she is. I'm going to show you a picture of her. And there is a row of five female journalists, and they're all standing up. I'm assuming the judge is coming
in. She's kind of smiling.
She looks like she's at a party having the time of her life.
Everybody else. Have you not ever been caught during, and court is a great example, or even like, let's say, church, where you're supposed to be dialed in. We're supposed to be serious here. Mm-hmm. And someone looks down and says something, and you're like,
But Dana, like, more the
like
wink.
No, I can't defend the wink. But it's more like, I don't want to say a defense mechanism, but even police officers will tell you, like, if you catch me, like, grinning outside of a homicide scene, it's not because I'm not serious about my job or I'm not really good at my job.
You're breaking the tension.
Like, sometimes you just have to, like, after something so awful.
Yeah. But can you imagine what the reaction would be if you were, go back to being a reporter at Channel 5 for a minute.
And you wink at the, yeah, you can't wink at the camera.
No. And you're at a double homicide, okay? And your camera guy is panning across the street looking for some good B-roll. And he passes, the camera eye passes by two cops. And one of the cops looks over at the Channel 5 camera and just smiles
winks,
and goes
right, yeah.
And winks at the camera. That cop would be in trouble.
It's not a great look. Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
And I think it depends on the context of the trial. Maybe after a verdict, right? If it's something somebody's happy for. Like, what I'm kind of thinking about is, I don't know if you guys remember, the Arizona Cardinals quarterback, Derek Anderson, smiled and was laughing on the sideline back in 2010 when they were losing 27-6, and he had an infamous post-game rant about that. Not a good look.
There's more to it. The story about the reporter, Brittany Romano,
in the green dress.
From Vanity Fair, okay? That... The smaller girl, describe this picture.
It looks like they're in a New Year's Eve hat, two little girls, and they're just
two little girls, probably
beaming ear to ear.
Like seven or eight.
Seven or eight.
Okay. The girl on the left, that's Brittany Romano from Vanity Fair.
Yeah.
Care to guess the name of the girl on the right?
No idea.
Lindsay Clancy.
Oh, my.
They know each other from childhood.
Oh, my. What are the odds?
That's Lindsay Clancy right there.
I think they convict her, Scott.
That changes.
I'm
going to
say it right now. I think she's convicted. And I think she's convicted based on, in part, on the testimony of the psychiatrist who says, you don't just never hear a voice in your head. And then this happens and she says, well, I heard this one voice telling me to do this. Yeah. And then, by the way, she said she never heard the voice again. He said, it doesn't work like that.
I'm torn on this.
Thank you so much for listening to this True Crime Roundup from the On Deadline podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to 1010 Winds in New York, KCBS Radio in the Bay Area, KYW News Radio in Philadelphia, Jason DeRussia and the Adam and Jordana Show out of WCCO News Talk in the Twin Cities, The Mark Cox Morning Show out of KFTK in St. Louis, Scoot out of WWL in New Orleans, and the Dana and Parks Show out of KMBZ in Kansas City. You can find these programs on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts. You can find these true crime roundups by subscribing to the On Deadline podcast, the Who Killed Strawberry podcast, or the Bitter Academia podcast, on the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.